Good to be with you. I'll start the year off together with you worshiping God. A great way to start 2026. What I want to do today, a little bit of a different type of sermon. This is more of a deep dive on the Magi. And so I wanted to get some info on the Magi, some questions about who they were, where they're coming from, why they're coming to see Jesus, and then finish with, like, why does it matter? Right? Because every sermon has to finish with why does it matter? But my goal today is if we ever are in a trivia contest with another church in town, we're gonna crush them on the Christmas category. We're gonna be able to know our stuff. So especially when it comes to the Magi. So let's start with who they were. Every Christmas manger scene has wise men, right? Every yours do, mine do, all of them do. They're a crucial part of the Christmas story. And so sometimes we call them kings, sometimes we call them wise men, sometimes we call them magi. In the Bible, they're called magi. And the reason we use that word is because magi was like a title. It was a position in the Persian Empire as an advisor to the king. That was what they were called. They were called magi. And a magi was part statesman, part administrator, part astronomer, part astrologist. That's a weird mix, I get it. But that's what they were. The Persian Empire, their religion very much believed in the stars. They were horoscope people, you could say. Very much believed in the stars. So they thought, if we know and we can learn enough that we can see what's happening in the stars, that'll tell us what's happening on the earth and how to respond. And so that's kind of how the Persian emperor and the Persian rulers, they looked to the stars for guidance. And so they had this council around them of advisors, magi, and the magi's job was to read the stars, tell them what was happening on earth, and then how to proceed. And so magi were a thing, right? It wasn't just like a title that meant wise man or something. It was like a position in a cabinet, an advisor, a chief advisor, a strategist, we might say today. And magi were to the Persian king, not the Roman emperor, the Persian king had magi. And these three magi, or more, we'll get to that in a second, were looking in the stars, and they saw something that told them in the east, in Israel, Judea, a king is being born. Now, what they saw, you know, there's a lot of debate about that. There's different astronomers that might say they saw like a conjunction of planets and different things that kind of aligned together. You know, a few years ago, we had an alignment right around Christmas that was Jupiter and Mars and a number of planets aligned into one point. And it only happens like once every 600 years. And people were calling it the Jesus star. I mean, that's a possibility, right? It could have been something like that. But they watched the stars. It's what they did. And they saw something in the east that said, in this land of Judea, someone important is being born. And so they wanted to go see him. Now, how long it took to get there, right? Iran, the country of Iran today to Israel, not a short drive with today's technology. Right, Persia, modern day Iran, not a short drive with today's technology, not a short flight, a couple hours. So you can imagine on camels, probably a little bit longer. And when you add in the fact that the Magi are government workers, they probably had to get their grant approved, the funding approved, get the staffing. They didn't travel alone. Right, it's not. I love like the movies and the Christmas shows that throw like, you know, three guys like through the desert, you know, with a camel. They probably had servants with them that kind of, you know, set up their tents and took them down. They probably had a chef, you know, somebody that was with them to cook food and do things like that. I mean, they were important. If you think about it, when you think about dignitaries, when they come to South Texas, right? If the governor comes to South Texas, the governor just doesn't hop out of a Toyota Highlander, you know, and visit. A senator doesn't just get out of their car and just they're by themselves, right? There's a entourage that comes with dignitaries. Well, the Magi were dignitaries. So they have a caravan with them that they travel with. It's not just them, it's a caravan. And that's one of the reasons why when they arrive in Judea, Herod is kind of taken aback and the town is upset and scared when they come into Jerusalem because this caravan from the neighboring empire is coming in looking for a king. That's a little unnerving for Herod and those. So not quite sure how long it took them to get there, but most people believe that Jesus was not a baby in the manger when they came. It's not the same time as like when the shepherds arrived. Jesus was probably crawling by the time they got there. Jesus was maybe 6 months, somewhere in that vicinity. When you add in kind of logistics and travel, and then there's the clue in our gospel reading that says when they arrived, they found Jesus and his mother in their house, right? Not in the manger, not in a stable, in their house. So Mary and Joseph probably would have done what any couple their age and their culture would have done. They were going to move in with Joseph's parents. A wife moved in with the husband's parents. That's how it worked in those days. So when your daughter got married, she joined her husband's family. And when your son got married, his wife joined your family. And most likely, the family would add on a room to the house, or if they had means, build a house near theirs so that your son and daughter-in-law could live near you. So Joseph's family's in Bethlehem. We know that. That's why they're going to Bethlehem on Christmas. Probably they're living in Bethlehem, just figuring like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do what every couple in our time does. We're going to move in or move close to Joseph's family, and we're going to raise Jesus. And they're in their house. And in their house, these visitors come and find them. Now, how many were there? That's a question. This is when I get into this, I ruin Christmas for some people. So I apologize. If you are, there only can be three, there has to be three. I'm sorry for the next 2 minutes. But there are between 2 and 12 throughout Christian history. There's never a number given in the Bible. Magi, just plural. There's never a number given. The reason we always have 3 is because there's 3 gifts: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So this is true. St. Francis of Assisi in 1223 AD wanted to do something different in his church so that people could get a visual, something to see to remind them of how humble the birth of Jesus was. So he created the first ever manger scene. And he needed 1 wise man to hold the gold gift, 1 wise man to hold the frankincense, 1 wise man to hold the myrrh, because there were 3 gifts. So he had 3 wise men. And it just became that there were 3 from that time on. We don't know the number. Could have been 2, could have been 12, who knows? But they had 3 gifts. They could have just went in and chipped in on the gift. That's entirely possible. We don't have the accounting of that, you know, so it's just our best guess. And so they arrive, this group, could be 3, could be more, with these gifts for the king that they've seen, or his birth told in the stars. And when they come to the house, they give 3 gifts. And there's symbolism in the gifts. Gold is a gift that you would give for a king, a tribute. Gold is a tribute for a king. A frankincense is an incense that's used in worship. It was high-end incense that was used in religious services. So frankincense would be something maybe for God. So recognizing that this child is somehow a king and God. And then myrrh is the strangest one, because in probably in the Magi's culture, myrrh is used in medicine. most likely in those times. They mix myrrh with things to make medicine. But the Jewish people used myrrh for funeral preparations. So I don't think the Magi were thinking, let's bring some funeral spices to this family. Right? It's like a thing you don't do, I would imagine, at a party celebrating the birth of a child, is to bring some funeral spices. It's like when Sarah and I got married, they said you don't give knives to newlyweds as a gift. It's my family. I don't know if that's a thing or not, but my family said, no. You can't put knives on your registry. You don't want knives as a gift. It's bad luck. Is it bad luck? If we use them on each other, it's bad luck. But I mean, like, you got to cook, right? But that was just a thing, right? You didn't do that. And so I doubt that they were bringing this gift to the child thinking this is what they use in funerals. They were probably thinking, hey, we're bringing some of our best kind of medicinal stuff we're bringing. But the Jewish people didn't use it that way. The Jewish people used it for burial and funeral stuff. So there's a kind of a prophetic hint in the gift of the sacrifice that's coming. So gold for a king, frankincense for religious worship for someone divine, and then the myrrh, they're thinking, is kind of like high-end medicine, but the Jewish people use it for burial, for the sacrifice. And that's the three gifts that we see the three kings bring, the wise men, the magi, to Jesus, and the symbolism that they hold. Now, all of this is great, but the final question we need to answer today is, why does it matter? Like, why celebrate Epiphany? Why talk about the wise men? Why does every single Christmas scene we have in our house have wise men and shepherds? Because there's something about this story, the bookend in this story of who is called to be around the Christ child. And in the early church, they would think, well, you know, the Messiah was Jewish and for Jewish people, but you can't think that when you have the Magi there too. The Magi are Gentiles, and they're called to be around the Christ child. They recognize who he is. And so in the early days of the church, there was this idea that we see from the very beginnings of Jesus' life that he's not just here for some people. He's here for all people. From the beginning, you could see that he was here for all people. There's also some great learning that we can do from the two characters, the two groups, of the way God reaches us, right? The shepherds are just doing their job, and they get kind of blindsided in the middle of the night with an appearance from an angel to come and see the Christ child. We might call that, you know, those of us that might need to get hit by a 2x4 for God to get our attention. It happens on occasion. Some of us may have experienced it, but God does work that way. He did that for the shepherds. Stop everything, go do this right now. But there's the other side of it, the Magi, who are just kind of on this journey, literally on the journey, but also they're using their gifts, their intelligence, they're doing their job, and they're just sincerely seeking truth, and that brings them closer and closer and closer to Jesus. So for those who God calls and kind of interrupts, and for those who are searching and God gently and slowly leads them closer, both groups are represented. And maybe we have people in our life that we're praying for, that are on our hearts, that might fit into those two categories. Maybe we've been one of those two people at a time in our life. Somebody that God's needed to get their attention in a very drastic way, or somebody who just kind of slowly, step by step, has kind of been drawn closer. But if we do have people in our lives that we're praying to find God, and maybe we don't see a way that they're just going to snap out of it, there is a prayer, like the shepherds, that God would just kind of interrupt their life and make himself unignorable and draw them to the Christ child. Or maybe there's people in our lives who are great people and sincerely trying to do their best, but they're just not quite there yet. And we could pray like the Magi, that God would step by step, day by day, sincerely lead them to himself. Right? We see both groups around the Christ child, and that should give us comfort, whoever we might have on our heart, that he came just not for some people, but for all people. And so we're gonna shut down Christmas after service today. We're gonna put the gifts away. We're gonna put the decorations away. We're gonna take down the candles. We're gonna just, church will look normal next week. But the gift of the Christ child remains. Whether we're thinking of someone who might need something jarring or someone who's taking small steps, throughout the year, the gift remains. The Christ child came to draw all people, not just some people, all people to himself. So if we're praying for someone, we're thinking of someone, don't lose hope. Be encouraged by that. And remember that the gift remains throughout the year. The Christ child came to draw all to him, even if we need a 2x4 or the slow, small steps. He's drawing us all to himself. In the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.